look at this, everybody's, I can't believe this is just in 12 bars. You know, it's just incredible when you see how complicated it is. But you don't need to know that to enjoy the music. So that's another area of music research, looking at the techniques that have been used and how well they've been applied.
No,
Now that's
just
quite, sorry.
oh, sorry. Just a random question like that just popped into my mind. What are your thoughts on modern popular music? Would you say that it's good or bad from a technical or
Well, it depends
like musical
what it depends.
perspective?
You know, the question whether contemporary commercial pop music is good or bad, I'm not sure that's a an, what is the music meant to do? And then you can make a judgment or whether something is good or bad. You know, it's I mean, I'm not going to dance to Mozart. But there's lots of stuff I do, and especially coming from my background with classic rock and or my upbringing, not my background, my upbringing, although I did play in a couple of bands. Yeah, classic rock, that's what I want to dance to. You know, not so crazy about disco. That was coming in towards the end of my mind. No, that doesn't have enough of an edge to drive me. So for me, disco isn't as good as classic rock, but that's mainly because I'm looking for something to dance to. I mean, why do you think one type of commercial music is better than another? What is it that drives you? I'll throw the question back at What do you dance to?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it comes down to personal preference, really. A lot of it maybe just has to do with your upbringing. Like, I was raised in a lot of hip hop music, so I guess that's what I drive to naturally.
Yeah.
And so, I would say, but part of that is because, okay, you want to dance, you want to move to it, right? But for a lot of that, there isn't the intellectual engagement in terms of the depth of intellectual engagement that you can find in other types of music. And you know, if you're doing trance or drum and bass or things like that, other people say, well, there's nothing there for me. You know, it's not engaging people, some people the way they want it. For me, there's a lot of commercial music. It won't engage me intellectually, but it makes me want to move. I mean, and that's me, what that is about. Often you find in discussions of commercial music, people aren't talking about the music, they're talking about the words. But they don't have language to talk about what's actually happening in the music. Musicians have that language, and especially people who are in the commercial, who are in commercial music or jazzers, et cetera, they can talk about the harmonic structure, the way progressions are going, the way things, or for instance, here's another look at that. Studio engineers have a whole other way of looking at commercial music in terms of talking about the processing, talking about how things can be manipulated in the studio. Music producers have a whole other way in terms of, now you got to hold back in the first half of the piece and then really let it go in the later on, or things that go counter to that. Something in the air tonight, as an example, is something, nothing happens, then halfway through the song, bang, it starts up, and it's like, whoa, what happened there? It's unusual. It stands out for that. I don't know if we're answering any questions here, but you know, this is like a 3-beer discussion, you know?
We'll be right back here on Research Review after just one short message, so please stay tuned.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
We're back here on Research Review. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. So far we've been interviewing Dr. Bob Pritchard, an associate professor of music technology at UBC, and Guran, I think you had a question to ask.
Maybe now we should go maybe into like the more non-traditional music research and maybe some of the stuff you do with the Smart Project, the Taste Project, and the Laptop Orchestra, and maybe talk a bit about that.
Sure, happy to do that. I'll start by talking about three or two areas that get combined into one area, and then we can go on and talk about how that is expanded into teaching at UBC. 6-7 years ago, I guess it was, as I said, I co-supervised engineering capstone projects. And we had some engineers come and work with the students in the laptop orchestra, working with the Kinect version 2, Kinect for Windows version 2 cameras, the gaming cameras. And what we had them develop was software that can track up to 25 points on each dancer, on each person. And it can track up to 6, but we're generally only tracking 2 dancers. And we get X, Y, and Z data off each of those joints. And we can select which joints we want to track. And then we use that data to control audio processing or video processing or even theater lighting. So the students in Laptop Orchestra are taught how to program in MaxMSP. That's one of the courses you can take after you've taken the first year music technology course in the School of Music, which all music students have to take this course. And up to about 125 students, so maybe 40 students each year are non-music students. After you've taken that course, then you can take the Music 319, 320, which are, the first one is electroacoustic music, the second one is computer programming. So you can do that in second year. And then after that, you can take Laptop Orchestra. And in Laptop Orchestra, people are writing pieces where, try to explain, we have a saying in the studios, if I can tap my foot to it, it ain't music. Okay, so it's generally quite non-rhythmic, not beat-based music. But we have the dancers, we're able to choose which of their limbs or target points on their bodies. And by moving around, they can control filter sweeps, or they can control C to M ratios in FM synthesis. They can control volume. They can control switching between things, different types of synthesis methods. But they can also control video processing, in terms of scrubbing through video, making it jump back and forth, or triggering video clips. And they can also control the gobo patterns, the patterns that theater lighting can set up. And we can also have the theater lighting track them wherever they move on stage. And so the students learn how to write this. But we, as I say, 5 or 6 years ago, we started working on this. And this was what we called the Kinect-controlled artistic sensing system. You always have to have good acronyms. So KICKASS is what this is called. And it makes use of the Kinect for Windows version 2 cameras. These aren't made anymore. They're obsolescent, which is why, was it last year, the year before, I was able to go to a pawn shop and buy a whole bunch of these. We now have about 13 of these cameras.
Kinect, you mean, it's the technology that was used on the Xbox, right, before?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And so we're still using, you can buy these things on eBay for super cheap, right? And we write our own software. So we've been using this ever since then. We've used them, I'll talk a little bit about where we've used them, but we've used them for a lot of dance projects and also installations. Students also learn how to do interactive art installations using this. This past year, or the past year and a half, things have been a little mixed up because of COVID. One of the problems with the KICKASS system is that if you have two dancers cross, or they go off stage and come back on, out of the viewing area, excuse me, and come back on, the system assigns a new ID number to them internally. And then you lose all the presets. They said, well, on dancer, whatever, 3, 6, 7, 4, we're going to track the two elbows and the ankles and the waist. Well, it loses that. So what we've done over the past couple of years, we've done a couple of experiments using color tracking, where we have the dancers wearing these bright neon colored leotards. And so the pink dancer is always going to be dancer 1, the yellow dancer is 2, purple is 3, lime green is 4, et cetera. And so we don't have to worry about losing track of individual dancers, so they can maintain their control. That's one of the things we've been working on. And coming back to your question about research, so the results of this, I've presented this at conferences, these performances, and the results of the research get presented at conferences like the International Computer Music Conference or the New Interfaces for Musical Expression. This is the type of research that's being done now, or some of the types of research that's being done. The And the results of this is used in performance. We create new works. Once we've got the technology working, we create new works for artistic performance. And then the question is, well, is this an interesting artistic performance or not? Does it work or does it not work? All right, so this is part of it. So that was one of the first things we did, dealing with tracking. And we've been doing other types of tracking, but from earlier than that. A second type of tracking we've been doing is what are called responsive user bodysuits, or RUBS. And with RUBS, we've taken dance leotards and we put sensors, conductive and resistive fabric on them. And it's in parallel strips. So one strip is just conductive for power. And the second strip is a type of mesh, a resistive mesh. And then the performers wear gloves that have conductive fabric on the palms of the gloves. And by stroking their sleeves or the body, wherever the sensors are, they're able to create changing voltages. This is like a potentiometer. And by doing that, then you're able to digitize that. And now you've got digital data that you can use to control sound or video or lighting or whatever. So that's pretty cool. And we've done 7, 8, 9 of those suits. We've performed with those suits. They've been used in Canada, down in the States, in Virginia. They've been used in various places. I'll talk a little bit more about that. So that's been going for about 4 years. And out of that, we also created what are called sleeve hand responsive user garments, or shrugs. And those are made out of cycling shrugs. And if you're a cyclist, you know, your shoulders and sleeves can get cold. So you get these shrugs that just cover shoulders and sleeves, and they zip up at the front, but they're only half on the back. And with these then, we did the same thing. We put resistive strips on them. And all of these, and so it's acting like a RUBS setup, but it's sending the data. There are only 4 sensors on it. And all of these use wireless connections to send the data to our computers. The reason we use Wi-Fi rather than Bluetooth is many years ago, when Sid Bells and I were working on gesture-controlled speech synthesis using cyber gloves, so you could talk with your hands, talk and sing with your hands, we had a performance in Ontario where there were about, 300 cell phones in the audience that all were trying to get access to our Bluetooth connection. They just swamped us, and we lost, in the middle of performance, we lost our connection, our Bluetooth connection. And that one said, we are never using Bluetooth again. So one of the engineering capstone projects that I oversaw four or five years ago, I had engineers create a Wi-Fi setup just for us we started with the Arduino MKR 1000 boards and created Wi-Fis, little Wi-Fi, LiPo-powered Wi-Fi units that the dancers or the performers wear. Since then, one of my music students rebuilt these. So we now have, using ESP32 boards, he laid out a new board and got them printed up in China. And they can handle up to 19 sensors, but they also can drive LED, addressable LEDs. So this is what you do in music now. You write, you create boards and do this. So we now have, in addition to this, we now have LED spines that we're creating that have addressable LEDs on them, and dancers or performers wear them in concert. And either we can control, wirelessly we can control their the lighting and the lighting patterns, or they can control them by wearing sort of RUBS sensors on their dance suits, or other performers. For instance, we can have the sound, one performer's sound coming through a microphone. We can analyze the frequency or the dynamics or the timbre of that sound and use that to control the lighting on a dancer on the other side of the stage, for instance. So this is another area that we've been working on with researching.
What advantage does having the performer having control of like lighting, sound, video have over like pre-recorded video or pre-mixed sound?
One of the things that it does, it allows for improvisation and the control. Rather than being locked into a piece being the same every time, it means you can improvise and respond and say, well, I don't want to do that yet, and now I want it to. It's like if you were saxophone or trumpet in a jazz combo or something. You don't want to play the same piece all the time. You want to be able to experiment. So that's a very good question. I mean, a lot of the stuff you see, for instance, at car shows where you see dancers up on stage doing a demo or something, and they're jumping and shooting their arms out. Boom, you got light bursts and video happening behind me. Those aren't interactive. A lot of those are just really, really tightly rehearsed. And it's the same thing every time. And they have to be in the same place on stage every time to get the look. Whereas when it's not that way, the piece will be slightly different every time. And for me, I think that's a little more interesting. It's for instance, when you go to a live show, last live show I went to, band I went to was U2, but you don't expect to hear exactly what you heard on the CD or on the file. It's slightly different.
Right, so it almost feels like a musical instrument in a way, like almost like jazz.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a really good analogy. And many of these are musical instruments, which is why we're at 9 conferences, which is new interfaces for musical expression. Yeah, this is just some other interface for controlling sound. And is it more expressive? I'm working on a couple of other interfaces right now with traditional acoustic instruments and seeing if we can make them more expressive by adding sensors to them that give performers greater control. So that's the shrug. So I talked about the rubs and the shrug and Kick-Ass, and all of this has come together for the Taste project. So the tracking and smart textiles research environment, which is Taste. And all of these, that's where all of these have been pulled together. So we're controlling the lighting. We did a very lovely piece last year for a Turning Point Ensemble, which was for oboe and dancer with light spine. And that got released last January. I'm really pleased about that. That was a sort of a six weeks from the day I got the email saying, would you like to create a piece, to 6 weeks later, we were in the Telus Theater for 8 to 10 hours of video shooting. And it was just crazy leading up to that. I had to write the piece, write the software to control it, get the costuming done by a professional costumer who's part of our research group. And it's just crazy. That's a really short amount of time to get something pulled together like that. And then went through a similar thing in July, getting a piece pulled together. Had a lot more time on that one, but that was for Megumi Misaki, a concert pianist, and she was wearing a shrug. And the piece is about the internment of Japanese Canadians in World War II. And so she is triggering samples from letters that Japanese Canadians wrote to others complaining or describing what they were going through, or letters complaining to the government about all of their possessions being taken and sold and things like that. So it's a very poignant piece, very tough. I'm really pleased. That was the first, that's the first shrug piece that we, so that's quite recent. That should be released at the end of August, I think. So some of the other research that's been going on in my lab this summer, I've got 3 research assistants working for me this summer. 2 of them are programmers, programmer composers, and 1 of them is a dancer pianist. So the dancer pianist helped me work on the piece, the piano piece with the shrugs. And now we're working on a new piece with a new spine that will also involve one of the other research assistants who has made at least 1, possibly 2 3D printed violins that have sensors in them as well. And we will put lighting inside one of those violins. And then this piece, both the violin, it's got wireless, it's in the same way we normally do, and the dancer will have wireless on her. And she'll also be tracked with the Kick-Ass system. Could we make this any more complicated? I'm sure we could, just adding as much technology as we can. We have finished by the end.
Definitely. We'll be right back here on Research Review after just 1 short message.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What's this Pilate? He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sunday.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're back here on Research Review, and today we have been interviewing Dr. Bob Pritchard, an associate professor of music technology at UBC. So I would say, Gurman, you had something to ask right now.
I guess I start with like a philosophical question that stems from that thought. Do you ever feel like you could integrate technology into music and dance so much that it loses its human touch?
Well, it's an interesting question. Nobody questions the piano, but the piano is one of the most complicated pieces of musical technology we have. And it's taken tens of thousands of people, hundreds of years to refine it. But people sit down at the piano and think, oh, that's great, but there's no understanding, unless you study piano, the history of piano construction, about the tremendous problems that were solved in terms of being able to get the release mechanism so it falls away to let the strings ring, or even the tuning systems. Like when you tune a piano, there's not one way to tune a piano. Different tuners can use different systems, or one tuner can use different systems. But getting this piano sound to ring, when you have there are three strings on most of the notes when they're struck. There's not one string, there are three, and they're slightly out of tune, very, very slightly out of tune. That's been developed over the years. And so the sound sort of ebbs and grows. It has a life in it. And people say, oh, that piano playing is so soulful, but it's incredible technology. The same thing the violin has developed over hundreds and hundreds of years. It's another piece of really complicated technology. So I think the technology is always there. It's how we use it where we, you know, how do we get the emotive aspect to be the strongest with it? How do we communicate the most effectively? I think there's an underlying point to your question. And maybe it comes back to, is the purpose, what is the purpose of creating music? Why do we create music, and who creates the music?
Is it to express emotions?
I think so. I think that's one of the things, to express emotion, but it's also for when I'm listening to music, I also want it to satisfy my head when I'm listening to the structure or the registers that are being used. Is this the best use? You know, is this satisfying that one? I guess maybe intellect. I want it to be, I want great music to touch my head and to touch my heart at the same time. Am I going to be happy, though, one of the things I teach in our first year course in music technology, just as part of the survey at the end, is I show how more and more we have algorithms that are writing music. And there, you can go online, you can get a subscription to a service where you can type in the emotion you want, and it'll give you a list of music tracks, little short segments that you can pull in for your film. And these are all in the same key, so they're all going to mix however you want. And you can just grab these and mix and match to get the emotion that you want. Now, the problem here is everybody's going to be using the same samples for this. So it can start sounding pretty self-similar to what if everybody was going to use that. But we're certainly getting to the point where we'll be able to type in into a program, I want 40 seconds of, this is a car chase, 40 seconds, and it gets more and more exciting. Here are the hits when you go through and you spot the film. Okay, you know, 10 seconds in, there's a near crash, there's a near miss here, and somebody jumps over the car at this point. You go through and mark those in, and we're getting to the point where the algorithm will just then go and write that exciting car chase music and drop it into your film. So this brings up, what is the writing music, what is the purpose of writing music? And for that, okay, that's to make a movie scene exciting. But there are many other purposes. One of the other purposes of writing music is just to write music for people to have fun playing together. You know, and some people, I just want to improvise together. Well, that's fine. Other people want to say, well, this is tricky. I want to have a piece of music every day. I have to sink my teeth into it and get tightly synchronized. It's sort of like synchronized swimming or something like that. You've got a group of people all working together, and when it all works perfectly, not that anything ever works perfect, when it all works so tightly, it's so artistically satisfying. It's also physically satisfying to perform. So when this comes back to, do we lose humanity in the technology? I think it's how we use the technology. It's certainly possible. And I know I've seen, you can have people who couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, but they're still able to work with samples. Right? Mind you, we do have some performers, acoustic music performers, instrumentalists, who don't sing very well either. So that's it.
That's true. We'll be right back here on Research Review after just one short message. So please stay tuned.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alarat, and along with my co-host Gurman, today we've been interviewing Dr. Bob Prichard, an associate professor of music technology.
So just before we wrap up, one just last random question. What is your favorite instrument, you would say?
Oh, gosh, that's really tough. I grew up playing oboe. Mm. Of a very soft spot in my heart for oboe. But I would have to say, as a music technologist, I love the computer. And all the things I can control the computer with all of the sensing, etc.
So which instrument would you say are you most proficient in?
Oh, I haven't played oboe even semi-professionally for years. I haven't sung semi-professionally or even professionally for years. What am I most proficient in? Maybe it's back to computer. I practice computer every day.
And what is the first instrument you ever touched, I guess, basically?
I ever touched. My mother was a very good pianist, and so we would. I remember when I was five trying to compose music, playing it on the piano, and my mother would play what we'd written, which was really dreadful as a five-year-old because it didn't make any sense. So the first instrument was piano, but then in my house we had an early music ensemble, recorder ensemble. All seven of us in the family played in the ensemble, and we actually did tours in the Okanagan Valley. But then I've also learned clarinet and oboe, and I've taken lessons on string instruments. And yeah, it's pretty wide ranging.
It's pretty cool. How about you, Gurman? Do you play any instruments?
Oh yeah, I grew up on a ton. Let's see, I had the piano, then the saxophone. I got a guitar right there. I played a bit of trombone.
The guitar is more recent, right?
Yeah, the guitar is a bit more recent.
That's why he's doing his 2 hours a day of practicing, right? Without
No, you just got that to impress the ladies.
He's impressing everyone if he's doing 2 hours a day of practicing. That's the baseline for getting good.
It's funny. I used to also play piano as a child and saxophone as well, a little bit in school band, but that's pretty much it.
So what were your piano lessons like?
It's a good question. I don't remember much, but I think it's basically like the music that we would play would progressively get harder as time like went on, like more complex.
Probably Royal Conservatory or Western.
Yes, Board. Yes, Royal Conservatory. And like just trying to like slowly. And sometimes for some pieces, like what we do is we would do like right hand or left hand only separately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then become proficient, or perhaps if slow the tempo down a little bit, so like very slowly, and then speed it up so that
gradually get them so you can synchronize them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I was doing my doctorate, my first year of my doctorate, I decided I wanted to take organ lessons. And wow, that was crazy, because you've got your right and your left hand, but then you've also got your feet playing the pedals. And it took me about a month to get my left hand disconnected from what my feet were supposed to be playing. Come on, neurons, start firing properly. Things to look forward to.
Yeah. Maybe going into like further applications of the computer in music. Could it also just be used as a teaching tool? I'm guessing if you have like X, Y, Z coordinates, you can use it to teach accuracy, consistency.
There's a great deal of teaching software. A lot of it is working on drill work, which isn't so interesting, but things that have to be done, like learning to recognize chords and intervals and melodic passages, and recognize the different modes and key areas and things like that, harmonic progressions, things like that, that when we were in undergrad, it was really difficult to practice those, to get a good ear for those. So there's a lot of software now, both online and subscription, and you can purchase it as well. I can't remember the software that's been used in the School of Music has changed over the years, but I know they've been using various types of software for that type of teaching. But there's other areas where software is being used. Obviously, it's music notation, and there's several different notation programs that are available. One of the professors at the School of Music, Professor Keith Hamill, actually writes his own notation software, which we all use, because unlike the other software, his is really quite unique. We can embed computer commands into the scores so that, and then his software can follow along on a performance. And when it gets to a certain point, it will trigger the video changes or the audio processing or whatever. We've got those things are embedded in the scores. So music notation is another area. The analysis of sound is quite common in music, in terms of, for those of us who are working with abstract electroacoustic music and you want to analyze a sound and maybe pull some things out of it or filter it, etc. Music psychology, there's a lot of studies, a lot of areas now with music cognition, and they're making use of software. And that sort of bleeds over into other areas. One of my other areas that I've been involved in research is linguistics and accent. And I've been working with linguistics for 2 or 3 years now, looking at the accent of the Okanagan Valley, of Canadian English in the Okanagan Valley, and how it differs from Canadian English in the Lower Mainland. I grew up in the Okanagan, so I was aware of certain differences on certain words in the Okanagan from when I grew up and being down in the Lower Mainland.
Yeah, it's interesting. Our next interview is actually going to be with a linguistics researcher studying phonetic variation. So,
who is that?
Rachel Sue, PhD student.
Okay, Molly is one of the profs I work with there.
Molly Babel is the PI. Yeah.
We did that project together, and that started when I asked her, "Has anybody done a study of this?" And she goes, "No, we should have coffee. We should talk about this." So we went and got a connect, as you do. So that's another area, sound analysis, and then also databases for just music history, music theory, be able to slow things down and analyze progressions, or to be able to do database searches. That's very common. And then those of us who write our own software for doing sound synthesis, which is, I should just quickly not take up all your time, but so all of this research that I'm doing and that Keith Hamill does in the School of Music, this comes back down in the students. It affects the students in the way we teach. So students get, as I mentioned, after doing the first year general survey course, in the second year, they can take a composition course with me, doing electroacoustic, learning different types of synthesis methods. Then they take computer programming with Professor Hamill in the second semester. And then they can take laptop orchestra. And in laptop orchestra, you program your own instruments, and then you're in groups and you create short pieces that use gesture tracking, alternative methods of playing. Our general concern is that we don't want you touching your computer in performance. So you have to use other ways of controlling the sound, and that's where the kick-ass system comes in, or we use color tracking and pictures of students with dots, different colored dots stuck on them as they're moving around with their webcams to try and control things. Or we use Wii controllers or other game tracks and things like that. So the type of research we do with all of this gesture tracking, et cetera, the students then get to use that. The kick-ass system, actually, we are also something else in my research. We're also doing distance performance. So we have I've been working with a dancer in California and another composer over in Oslo. The dancer in California, we have a kick-ass system down there. She dances, and her data is sent to Oslo to control sound and up to Vancouver to control video on my computer. And then we mix those down. That's type of distance work. We have another grad student, a violist, who's working with a dancer in South Africa. So the dancer in South Africa has a kick-ass system, and the violist is here in Vancouver, and they are improvising and creating pieces. And we're just about to send a kick-ass system over to the University of the Philippines in Quezon City, where I took the laptop orchestra there a year and a half ago, just as COVID was breaking out, right? And we spent 2 weeks there working with their students, and so we're going to and their dancers, and we'll continue that. And that's the third trip we've done with laptop orchestra. That's our third 2 week residency. We've been in Belgium, we've been in England, and then this one was in the Philippines. So this is how another way besides our international performances that we have, and my work and Keith's work, we're performing throughout Europe and North America and Australia and Hong Kong, Japan. But this is the other way we are getting. Spreading it around to students and letting them use the technology.
Right. We're sort of running out of time here, so I just have one last question. We have a few minutes left.
Well, you can end it with this.
Yeah. If the idea, one of the ideas of music is to convey emotion to the audience, wouldn't it make sense to maybe have some technology that takes cues not from the performer, but from the audience instead?
Absolutely. And we have more and more of that. In Laptop Orchestra, 2 years ago, one of the groups set it up so that all the audience, they put a QR code up and the audience dialed into a certain website, and they were able to contribute to the performance on their phones by steering things with their phones. And this has sort of become, this is what we do in Laptop Orchestra. It's an audience involvement. And there are many ways you could do that. You could do that maybe... have people monitor their heartbeat using one of the heartbeat apps and taking that data and feeding it into a server. And then maybe that adjusts the color or the way the screen pulses and see whether everybody's heartbeat goes up or something in the performance. Or even have people breathing into their phone so you can tell what's happening with their breath rate, or even just using the accelerometers and controlling things so that they become more involved. And I think it can be more satisfying for the audience if they're more involved. Maybe not. Some people might not. We all react and want to respond to music in different ways. So we'll write the app. We'll get you guys involved in this, okay?
Yeah, maybe. It was a pleasure talking to you. That was a very interesting interview.
Definitely.
Well, thank you. Just great chatting with you. As I say, this is like a three-beer discussion that could go on forever.
Yeah. It's the first time we've had a music professor on our show, so this was definitely an interesting talk.
Great. Well, I've just quite enjoyed being able to chat with you. Thank you very much for asking me to be on the show.
It was a pleasure.
This concludes Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM, and that was our interview with Dr. Bob Pritchard, an associate professor of music technology at UBC. We'll be right back.
place to hide. Hold on, hold on to your pride. The fire inside you's got the will to go brighter. Hold on, hold on to your heart. Remember the part that puts the life in alive.
Okay, so how did this happen? Now you was rapping, I guess we can make that work. The money is stacking as long as you snapping. Okay, I guess it's got perks. Your music got fashion, your story, yeah, I mean, I guess it does hurt. What if we made it a little bit more? Think about it like this. You not the realest, you know that, right? They not gonna feel this, you know that, right? You need some healing, this pain you can sit in. There's so much more to life, I mean. You not the realest, you know that, right? They not gon' feel this, you know that, right? Spain, you considering you need some more chillin'. You probably gon' pop you out of
a boy, don't know God, but a homie, no blessings. Keep grams on side in case a homie try test it. Cause we not fearing bullets, fearing mama see its lesson. If she do, then for now, we really done learn our lessons. Brass knuckles with shards, a broken home, a bludgeon into your dome. My homie not coming home, ain't nothing we could do about that. The moves now.
No, wait, here.
And been too long since my homie got took. And so for now, the only thing I'm fearing is mama's whoopings. Get you just for looking. Worried we not fast enough in our prints. Big on pages, sent to our stories, booking. Painting this picture, spraying it easily. Yeah, I know my homie's an inherently evil. Frame the church and blame the preacher. Don't blame the hood. Really, homie, just save his peoples. I don't know, here we go. Think about the scenario. Time for some reason, moving slow, cruising, blasting the stereo. I heard his mama here, you know, it'd be crazy if.
Nah, be stupid for that one.
This ain't no movie, my boy. The block is so hot, it might scorch you, my boy. Them homies on porches, my boy. Got no problem blowing your torture, my boy. It'd be unfortunate, but think about it. What mama gon' get if you a legend rapping from the heavens? I'm just saying, go on, think about it like this.
You not the realest, you know that, right? They not gon' feel this, you know that, right?
You need some healing, this pain you can sit in there. So much more to life, I mean.
You not the realest, you know that, right? They not gon' feel this, you know that, right?
This pain you concealing, you need so much healing. You probably gon' pop it out overnight.
Now, homie is crucial, who moving me wild. Limbs so unusual, get down on self. Then see right so beautiful. Blow my dear money on lil' homie funeral. Whole block running through the streets. Chrome on a coffin, hearse hit the corner. His dress shoes hit the ground. Celebrating his life brought him right back around. Now we hooting and hollering, being louder. We bothering everyone around with the sounds of the following. Joyful hymnals, back with subliminals to distract from the fact I'm without my kinfolk. Piecing together things I did in my life. All this rapping, where was you up on linen at night? Dogs chased my grams cause she was about that life. So keep your wits, little homie, a shepherd's do bite. Devil, let me look so good cause I feel so bad. Apologies, beloved, not trying to act like that. But this negro hair got me hooked on that. Same thing that make you just go mad. Things spread up into this thread, locked in the back. In case you ain't heard what I said. If I was really sad, I put this right to my head. Cause never double entendre, my homie is.
I'm Christine Dibble.
And I'm Carla Slytome.
And we are the KNC Jazz Duo.
And you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Seasons change. I'll look with you today. The Medicine Show, broadcasting healing energy with live music and laughter on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and online. We are grateful to be here on the traditional territories of the Coast Salish Nations, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. This land has never been ceded by treaty, war, or surrender, which means it's literally Indigenous land. The implications are not only legal, but social, and so much more. My name is Jason Q. Lawrence, and with me is... who are you?
I'm trying to discover who I am still.
Legit.
Yeah, but for now on, I'm Salvador.
Salvador James! Our theme today is change.
Yeah.
So we're listening to a song about change in the background here. The world has constants, and constant change is one of them, such as our society's recent changes in lifestyle and the evolution of the human condition. Our show has evolved into a multimedia show, and as we are responding to changes, we focus this episode on change itself, beginning with the next song, which is a Mexican artist named Julieta Venegas. She is singing a song called Algo Está Cambiando. And, okay, so that is... Well, this is actually quite fun and exciting to be settling back into UBC and at CITR with Salvador. And we are sort of just getting back into the rhythm of things. And Salvador reminded me by sending me, I said, we're doing this change theme. So he sends over a list of songs, including right on the. Okay, so just go to YouTube and go and bring it up. For some reason, our computer. Oh, there we go. Is not cooperating. So the part of our struggles is technology, and we're going to get to that as technology changes and we're getting used to it. There's always technical glitches driving us all crazy, and so that's our struggle. Another struggle is let's just listen to Julieta and her song about Algo Está Cambiando, which means something is changing. This is Julieta Venegas on The Medicine Show.
Me hablas, preguntas, si nos podemos ver después. Razones me sobran, pero aunque quieran no lo sé. Siempre hay algo más que a simple vista no se ve. ¿Será que hay algo más que a simple vista no? ¿Te asusta la idea de lo que puede suceder? Decirte quisiera algo que te haga sentir bien. Pero es que hay algo más que a simple vista no se ve. ¿Será que hay algo más que a simple vista no se ve?
Wow, far out, man. Hey, Salvador, where are you? Are you with us?
Yes, sure. I'm here.
Fantastic. We're back on the Medicine Show. It's a variety show with a strong focus on live music with health from a holistic perspective. And I am going to connect this other computer. Woohoo! Although the station has only recently reopened, we are still unable to have guests here. So we have adapted to safety concerns by partnering with a full production team called Leon's Live to bring you live video streaming of guests at a remote location on streaming on YouTube and Facebook Live as it happens. So, where's my headphones? There they are. Okay, so Love College Radio. All right. So if you want to see that production as it's happening and see people performing live, you can check out our social media for more information on that and see when. It's usually Sunday nights. Tonight, for the first time since COVID, we'll be featuring music about change. Considering we can't have guests to perform live music, we will also be sharing some live performances from shows at Leon's Live. And they have been doing this since May 30th, 2020, contributing to live music and to keep it truly alive. And through the past year, we've been forced to consider things like our comfort zone. One way to understand is to step back and or forward to a different perspective. Statistics have shown that after COVID lockdown began, there was a spike in the use of mind-altering substances. And many precious lives were lost, while many sacrificed time, privilege, or health to achieve change. We are grateful for artists who have shared their perspective that they gained and pray that you, on your own pursuit of change, take a safe approach. The next couple of songs are not only artists who have performed on Leon's Live, but when I listen to these, they seem to be touching on getting high from an introspective perspective. So first of all, we're going to listen to Beyond Land with their song Morocco on the Medicine Show.
Just a matter of time.
Rockin', rockin'. Wow, that was very exciting. And, well, I'd like to think that was David Saban with their song called Dope. And before that was Beyond Land with their song Morocco 68. Next up is Gardeners of Eden. Can't Get You Off My Mind on The Medicine Show.
She was oil rich, and all that came along with that. She knew the French Polynesians like the back of her hand. And I was nothing, couldn't afford a disguise, so I swallowed my teeth and I looked her in the eyes. Oh, and off we went sailing to Atlantis Bay, where the nights never end and there's ruby cocaine. I guess I should have seen it coming when our ship started to sink, but baby, we were on to something. Oh, we were on the brink of something more. Away from shore. Oh, but I can't seem to get you off my head. Darling, won't you just come here instead? Side of something good, you're always in a haze. And when a call could make the difference, well, the line goes dead for days. But she's been taking all the strangers to the Chelsea Hotel, 'cause she's numb and she's rioting to feel something else. And in Brooklyn they told me, yeah, they'd seen her around. Now she's going for broke, now she's tearing up the town. Oh Lord, you're such a bore.